jeez.
Emilio.
Oh, jeez, Mike. Where are we going?
This is fucking stupid podcast for babies.
That's how he would do it, too.
This is PCMC. I'm Mike Rajona. I'm joined once again by Emilio Sanchez Sparks.
Oh, jeez.
Huh. So today's episode, we're talking about Rick and Morty Season 4, Part 1.
Part 1.
It's pulling a... What are they doing? What do you call this? Pulling a...
Mid-season break.
Yeah, pulling one of those.
Yeah, a little Part 1.
Yeah.
Little Part 1 action. The whole four episodes.
I tell you, though, I was happy to see Season 4 even happened. I really thought after 3, it was never going to happen.
But listen, if you look at it, the show just keeps on elevating to...
It just... The writing just keeps stronger and stronger and stronger.
Do you think they need to have 2 or 3 years in between because the writing is that good? Is that what franchises should do? Should TV shows take a break?
Maybe, because I think this has been the strongest season since Season 2. I liked the 5 episodes of this season so far, I think, have been better than all of Season 3. And Season 3 is still excellent.
Yes.
But this is the strongest it has. These 5 episodes are so fucking strong. And when I say strong, I mean really good writing, really good art, really good performances, really good sci-fi ideas with really good comedy.
Well, also what I like about, you know, Season 3 going into 4 was they really started to explore, like, that whole... The show is meta.
Yes.
Like, we're not taking ourselves too seriously. Yeah. We're really going outside of the realm of what a cartoon, sci-fi, whatever this thing is. And it goes inside that they're making references that they are a television show.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, okay, cool.
Yes.
Like, ooh. Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. But you didn't think that there was a soft reboot?
In what sense?
In ways like, if you look at it, everything revolves around Rick Sanchez,
yes,
right?
Of course.
But in this season, it's become like the dynamic of power has shifted slightly, where now Morty has more control in the adventures and where they go and what they want to do. Whereas in the past, it was, I got this harebrained thing I got to go do. I'm going to go take the kid.
Right.
And then we're going to go off.
And in some ways, my overall theory, and it's not just mine, it's many people's. My overall theory is that our Morty, or the main Morty that we see, is evil Morty. So I think slowly but surely we will see him continue to grow in his own agency.
Yeah.
And remember, last season was very much defined by the fact that at the end of Season 2, Beth and
Jerry
broke up.
Yeah.
So in all of Season 3, you have Rick is now finally getting what he wants. Beth is miserable. Jerry's life was fucking sad.
Yeah.
And the kids are really messed up. At the end of Season 3, they get back together.
Yeah.
And now
they're happily married.
Right. And now Rick is in some ways more domesticated than ever. Because he's also grown as a person and he realizes he needs a family.
Yeah.
So, like, in the first episode of this season, he's like, come on, Morty, we're going on an adventure. And Jerry's like, Beth? And then Beth is like, Dad, we have a way of doing this now. And then he's like, can I take Morty on this adventure? And she's like, okay, as long as he's back or whatever.
There's a set of rules now.
Yeah, right.
It's
Jerry's house again.
Yeah, it's like, Dad, you can't talk to Jerry that way anymore.
Right. And he's acquiescing to these things because
he knows that. I think the overall fear of loneliness.
He's growing as a person, Rick.
But that's how it. But in Season 3, at the end of Season 3, I saw it as, wow, he's tremendously flawed. Knows that he is. Doesn't give a fuck about it. But then he's also inherently lonely.
Yes. So, yes.
And I think going into 4, I think he realizes, oh shit, you know, I want to be part of this family. And as much as I can't stand my bumbling, you know, woe is me
son-in-law,
he is actually a really good guy and loves his kids in a way that I have never loved anybody.
And I think he has figured, I think for a while he thought Beth would be better without him.
Yeah, she
was. And I think he realizes that Beth does love him. So for Beth's sake, he tries to preserve Jerry's place in the house.
Yes.
And also for Morty and Summers, because they got really fucked up. Remember the Mad Max episode from season 3?
So good.
Where they just fucking go nuts because they're dealing with their parents' breakup. Well,
but also, it also comes into Bette's fear of abandonment. Because Rick would pick up.
Which comes from
and,
Rick.
Yeah, which picks up at least. And then in 4, she's like, eh, you leave, you leave.
Right.
I got this. I can't have that.
She can't keep putting him first.
And that's what she was doing, and that was causing a rift. It's so crazy.
And in some ways, it's really, you know, it's really the outcome of everything that happened in the Pickle Rick episode. Like, a lot of people remember it for the ridiculous concept of him becoming a pickle. But really what that episode about is about Beth will do anything to let him off the hook. He clearly made himself a pickle to not go to therapy.
And then went goes to therapy.
Just talking about the show is so funny because it's so fucking weird. He does that to not go to therapy. And the therapist, played by Susan Sarandon, basically is like, why do you let him off the hook all the time?
Yeah.
And it's because she's afraid he'll leave.
Exactly. And then coming into the beginning of 4.
So I don't see it as a reboot. I see it as it is the story of the family continues to grow.
Drastically changed, though.
Well, one thing about season 4, and I like this, is it's more back.
Well, can we say a reset from season 3 then? Let's not
okay,
say
yeah.
We'll say reboot. We'll say reset.
Well, I think in season 4, what you see is the classic Rick and Morty adventure, whereas in season 3, there was a lot of summer episodes. There was a lot of, like, we're kind of back to the original structure of the family's doing whatever, but Rick and Morty are together doing their Rick and Morty things.
Which felt like a pilot episode to me, the first episode back of season 4.
Yeah, yeah. But this is also...
Because it reestablishes who the characters are, what the characters are supposed to be doing, and where they might go.
Well, think, this show has been on since 2013.
Insane.
So, this is season 4, and the show has been on since 2013. So, like, season 3 was 2017. That's 3 years ago now.
But it didn't get popular.
Right, but I think they know that they need to keep getting new kids. I mean, look, if you are, let's say you're like 18 now, right? You were a kid when
the
show.
You didn't get it.
You were 12 when the show first started. You were a kid and now you're an adult.
Yeah.
So I think it's smart. This is also, by the way, the first season opener since the very original season that wasn't, let's get out of the predicament of the finale. Like, it just sort of starts fresh.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, season 3 opened with, how does Rick get out of jail? How does Rick kill all his enemies? This was just sort of like, you could really just start fresh with season 4.
No, because everything was so episodic leading up to the end of season 3. And then once season 3 ends, Jerry and Beth are back together. So now that plot line is gone. That's a two-season plot line.
Right.
That's gone now.
Right.
So now we got to reset. And then what I'm seeing is now, and maybe I'm crazy, but I'm seeing that Summer has not an inferiority complex, but there's some sort of underlying issue where she feels that she cannot connect to Rick like she was, because she was a total badass in season 3.
Right.
This is more like, hey, guys, look at me. I'm here.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
And I think
in some ways she's taken a back seat.
But she was one of the strongest characters.
Right.
Summer should have been one of the... Like, she should have stayed a stronger character.
I love the episode in... Is it season 3 or season 2 where Summer is in the car and he tells the car, protect Summer, and she's just stuck in the car the whole time and everything that happens, like, the car will fucking kill people?
Yeah.
Well, let's go through this in order. There were 5 episodes. So episode 1 of season 4 is Edge of Tomorty, colon, Rick Die Repeat. All the episodes, by the way, have weird Morty puns in them, which are very clunky. And this was a great sci-fi concept. Rick and Morty go to a planet that has death crystals. And what a death crystal does is when you hold it, it shows you how you'll die.
But, like, it doesn't show the context of when.
Right.
It just shows you, like...
And also, your future is always in flux.
Yes.
So, like, Rick is in a gunfight with these aliens, and he's holding his death crystal. And he's seeing a vision of himself being shot. So he's like, okay, I can't do anything now. And then he sees that he dies in some other way. He dies of old age. And then he's like, okay, he's reloading. And then he gets up, and he shoots the alien. So...
He uses it. He uses it to his advantage to kill.
Yes.
Where Morty is using it more. Oh my God! I see that my future is with Jessica.
Right. He's still obsessed with this girl Jessica in Always. His class, and he sees. He picks up the death crystal, and he sees him old dying in Jessica's arms. Yeah. So he's like, I need this to be what happens.
Gotta stay with Jessica.
So he's holding it, and like. He'll like be standing, and if he turns to the left, he'll see he doesn't die that way. He dies in some other way. So he turns back until he sees himself dying with Jessica. So he becomes so addicted to this that his whole life is just moving towards that finale because he wants to die with her. And it just gets insane. And also,
Rick dies. Yeah.
And so because they're fighting in the space car, they crash and Rick dies. And then a hologram of Rick comes up, and he's like, hey, Morty, and he's like, I need you to reboot your grandpa. And he's got this whole subplot of, like, even though he's a hologram, he's all for hologram rights. And Morty doesn't want to resurrect Rick
because he knows that he will die, and he doesn't want to die without Jessica.
Right, exactly, because he's doing anything that will get him to what he thinks will be the eventual end of him with Jessica.
Happily
even ever a point, Jessica's like, hey, do you want to go skinny dipping?
Yeah.
And he sees that when he steps towards her, that vision of him dying with her goes away, and he's like, no, I guess not, because he still wants to eventually die with her.
Yeah.
And then there's the subplot of Rick keeps coming back because – establishing the show is that there's all these multiverses,
which is insane,
right? And the fact that they keep it up is insane because that's so much math to do. But like, Rick has all these ways of coming back. He clones himself and stuff. So you see that like Rick keeps coming back in all these ways, and he keeps dying. Like
he keeps on getting more and more creative too.
Right? He comes back and it's like a Nazi planet, and Morty is a Nazi, and. Then he comes back and he's like a crab.
Yep.
And it's a crab planet.
Nazi.
And they're crab Nazis. And then they all keep being Nazis. And he's like, when did this shit become the fucking norm? What is going on? And then eventually he comes back as a bee, right?
Yep.
And Bee Rick is able to find Morty. And Morty becomes this giant Akira monster.
Because he's still holding on to the crystal.
It's insane. It's such a good sci-fi concept. Just the idea of a crystal alone.
That's episode one.
Right. It's so strong and so dense. And you think, these are 22 minutes.
Yeah.
And in this, you get character, you get...
Subplot.
Yeah, a pretty good sci-fi idea. And then, of course, the after the credit bumper is... You see Jessica, and she's with her friends, and they're talking about what they want to be when they get older. And she's like, I want to be a hospice worker. And when people are dying alone, I want to look at their name tag and say, I'm here for you.
Morty.
And then you see Morty, and he's like, what the fuck?
It throws the crystal down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is – it's such a smart show. And the way it's layered and the plot and the subplot – somehow like merge together with it because right. Now Rick needs to come back.
Right.
And he needs to like, you know, reboot himself. Right. And it's like, all right, but how does he do that as he's going through these other like worlds as different right. Ricks?
What I think has always worked for the show is you've got Justin Roiland, one of the co-creators, with just these insane, brilliant ideas. But then you've got Dan Harmon, who's good at character.
Yeah.
And so even though there's all this shit happening, the characters are always there. It's never at – there's never plot that is happening because it's cool and it's at the sake of good characterization. It's even like going back to Community. There was so many weird, you know, theme episodes to that show, but it was always in service of the characters.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this episode, as weird as it is again about Rick needing Morty, about Morty's ability, very cold ability to give up Rick. Like, really.
To find his own happiness.
Like, there's a running bit that Rick treats Morty like shit, but
Morty treats Rick like shit. Yeah.
Yeah, you've seen a lot of times Morty sell Rick out.
All the time. The fucking time. But you're talking about character development and character itself.
Yeah.
I think that highlights in episode two when Jerry learns that getting his family back also means that he has to hold himself accountable.
Yes.
And he has to get his accountability back.
Yeah.
because that's how, like, you know. So what did you think of episode two? That it was more Jerry-esque.
Episode two, the old man in the seat. So Jerry creates an app with this alien who's voiced by Taika Waititi.
Dude, the fucking cameos.
He's on Taika Waititi's on. He's on
fire. Academy Award winner.
He just won for Jojo Rabbit. He's the voice of IG-11 in Mandalorian. Lucasfilm just gave him a Star Wars project to do whatever he wants with.
Resurrected the Thor franchise.
Oh, yeah. He came out of nowhere and fucking made the third Thor movie. It was amazing. He's this alien that wants to create an app. And Rick tattooed on his head, "Don't create an app with me." And he'll... Because Jerry will do anything. He can be talked to anything. He, like, Rick was like, "Don't create an app with him." And then he creates an app with him, and then Jerry finds out that the app was a whole plan to, like, take over the planet or whatever. But Rick's story, I think, is really interesting in terms of his character, because it goes back to that loneliness thing. Rick has a planet. He found a secret special place in the universe, this beautiful planet that he made a perfect toilet on.
Just to take a shit.
And he goes and he shits on it, and that's his piece.
That's his thing.
And he finds that someone else shat on his toilet.
And it pisses him off.
And he goes on this fucking journey to find who shat on his toilet. And he finds the guy, and the guy ends up being super fucking nice. And the guy's like, "We're going to be friends." And Rick's like, "No, we're not going to be friends." Yeah. And he's like, "I think we're going to be friends." And at every turn, Rick is trying to do his Rick thing of being scary and intimidating and being like, I'm the greatest genius in the world. And you're the guy's nothing.
Just like, "Eh, it's okay."
And
you're lashing out. It's all right.
And Rick, multiple times, Rick wants to kill him and lets him live. And in the end, I think, what happens? He goes to the guy's funeral or something, right? Or he finds out the guy was sick and died.
Because he wants to go because his wife was dead as well.
Right.
And so Rick is now playing into the emotions of the wife.
Right.
Dead wife.
Yeah. So he gets to Rick.
Yeah.
And Rick, again, realizes his loneliness.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect, the toilet's a perfect metaphor for Rick's whole life, right? Because it's this perfect thing that he's constructed for himself, but he just wants to be alone doing it. But what he finds is he doesn't.
And then somebody else takes pleasure in something that he created.
Right.
He goes off on this fucking tangent to destroy the same thing that can give so much people joy.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a good metaphor for we as humans will go off on these wild goose chases.
Yeah.
And we'll get so angry and irate that somebody else is enjoying this thing that just should be for us, that now we have to destroy it. It doesn't need to exist.
Right, right.
Like, I'm going to sabotage the thing that gives me happiness.
Right, which is something Rick does a lot. Rick will burn down everything. He'll do something just for spite and then burn it down.
Yeah.
Like the way in season two, he created that store to fight with the devil.
Just to get the approval of his granddaughter.
Right. We should also point out that in this episode we have cameos from Sam Neill as the alien leader and then as the alien queen, Kathleen Turner. And they're the king and queen of the alien planet that makes the app. Their whole thing is they make these dating apps, and the dating app tells you your soulmate, and then you obsessively will go for your soulmate.
Yeah.
And while you're doing that, they're just basically like, what are they doing? They're like feeding off. I forget exactly what they get out of it.
They just like they take like bits and pieces of like your fucking your construct, and they feed off that.
Yeah,
and it's like, ooh, that's that again. Playing on how social media and dating go into it, where you become obsessed with finding your soulmate. That all your data and everything now is being targeted and used as a fucking science experiment. So that way now it's like, well, you know, it's like a census.
Right.
Where X amount of times people have scrolled this way or they shared this information or, you know, they do this survey with that. And now it's like all this data gets compiled and now we tell you what you're going to be into, what you're going to like, what you want to buy.
Right.
How the media now takes over control of your life.
Right. And it's a distraction.
Huge distraction.
Yeah.
So that's what they do. But then in episode three, I think, again, because you're seeing the whole tie-in with the loneliness, I think also Rick learns to adapt his manipulations to the new, like, power in the family dynamic, where he's starting to realize, like, oh, shit, I need I need family.
Yeah.
I don't want to be that lonely guy who is sitting on the toilet and like I don't have anything to share with anybody.
Yeah. Episode 3 is called One Crew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Get it?
Yes, because it's about building a crew. This is the episode that feels very much like Dan Harmon saying how much he hates Ocean's 11 movies.
Oh, yeah.
Because the whole thing is about...
it's a satire on Ocean's 11.
Right, and the world's greatest con artist...
Not the Frank Sinatra Ocean's 11, the George Clooney Ocean's
right.
11.
The world's greatest con artist is in a competition with Rick. And Rick wants nothing to do with it because he's like... He keeps making fun of cons, but really what he's saying on a meta level is that it's bad storytelling.
Yeah.
Because he's like, yeah, and then there's a con, but then you find out that the con actually happened before and this was all, and then it's all flashbacks. It's just making fun of that whole structure that you see now, the Ocean's movies.
Yeah, now keep in mind, this is just the third episode. So now, like, you're seeing these plots are going to get more ridiculous
right.
as we get to episode 5. Right.
And Justin Theroux is the voice
so
of
good.
The con artist.
Oh, so fucking good.
But the episode just, it's almost, it like gives you a headache because it folds in on itself because each con man keeps saying, yes, but I double-crossed you. And then it goes back even further and it becomes so convoluted of who set up what when. And then Rick creates a robot that will only work randomly. So there's no way that it could double-cross him. But then the guy, It's just so ridiculous.
Which goes into episode 4 where Morty starts to learn that like there should be some set of like limits and restrictions with his grandfather because his grandfather could be rather dangerous at certain times. So it's like Morty starting to learn like that new social capital in a way where it's like, all right, I want to take control of this a little bit more because I think he is on this.
Uh-huh.
He's always been on this self-destructive
right.
like path, but I think it's more evident now, even though he wants to get it right. He wants to have this relationship with his grandson. He wants to have this relationship with his
right.
with his granddaughter. You know, he's even tolerating Jerry now. He's letting
right.
Jerry and Beth be a couple, and he's not interfering anymore. But at the same time, too, he's like repressing all like this pent up anger and aggression
right.
that he feels. So then when they go off and they go off on these adventures or these missions.
Yeah.
He's just, it's balls to the wall. And
yeah.
then you see what you see in episode 4.
Episode 4 is interesting because he tries to give Morty what Morty wants, which is Morty wants a dragon.
He wants a dragon.
So he gives Morty a dragon, but the dragon and the dragon master are supposed to bond, and it's just not happening.
Nope.
Like, Morty's like flying around with him, and he's like, well, he doesn't care. But
he's also dispelling the whole science aspect to magic.
Right.
Where he's
right.
saying science is superior and magic is bullshit.
Right, because he doesn't like magic,
no.
which is something that's consistent with the character. But it's another episode where Rick makes a friend because Rick goes, I think, to kill the dragon because the whole dragon experiment's not working. Right, like, yeah, you see fire come up from the living room and he's like, and that's the end of the Morty gets a dragon experiment. And
the Morty punch card.
Yeah. This is every couple of adventures you get an adventure.
This is your adventure.
So Rick goes to kill the dragon, but then him and the dragon like get along because they're both these wild animals that just want to be free, and they bond and they become friends. And it's an interesting thing because it's like, okay, Rick makes a friend, which is something that he's desperate for, but he can't help but hurt Morty because it hurts Morty.
Yeah.
So it's, again, it's this ridiculous concept that somehow gets at some deeper thing about relationships.
With the dragon orgy.
Oh, yeah, right, because when a dragon and a person bond, like you see like a magic beam between them and they start like convulsing like they're coming, and it's sort of like
hysterical.
It's this idea like it's like sex. So
yeah.
like when Morty sees Rick and the dragon bonding, it's like he's walked in on them cheating, and you know Rick's like, this is what it looks like. Who's the voice of the dragon? Oh, Liam Cunningham from is he from Game of Thrones?
I don't know who that was.
Yeah, he's from Game of Thrones. He's the voice of the dragon. But then there's a subplot that's very, very amazing, which is Jerry finds a talking cat.
Yes.
Voiced by
Matthew Broderick. Yeah.
What's great is they don't ever tell you what like the deal is. Like first he's like, Rick, what's with the talking cat? And he's like, I don't know what that is. That's your storyline. I have nothing to do with
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And then whenever he asks the cat, why do you talk? The cat's like, hey, who cares why I talk? Yeah. Let's just go down to Florida. And he takes the cat down to Florida. And then the cat, like, parties with people. And, like, you never get what the cat's whole point is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then in the end, like, Rick is, like, finds the cat and he's like, really, the why do you talk?
And then he looks, uses the machine.
To, like, look in his memories. And then, like, he's, like, Rick's looking, he's vomiting. Like, he's seeing some sort of horrible genocide or something. It's never clear how that is what leads to why the cat can talk, or
it's never said,
or why, like, the number one characteristic of the cat is that he doesn't want you to talk about why he's talking. Talk.
Yeah.
It's such a concept. That's amazing. Like, one idea from any of these episodes could be a fucking movie, and you'll have a 22-minute episode that has two stellar ideas. This episode has a whole dragon storyline, and then a whole storyline about a talking cat. And it's all
and then it ends.
Weaved together perfectly.
Yeah, and then it ends.
Right.
And then it ends with maybe we'll get a call back in 4 years when season 5 comes out.
Right.
You know? But then in episode 5, you have Rick doing, like, the whole I told you so tactic with Morty.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, it's like in the reminiscent episode of, like, the lawnmower dog where, like, Morty ignores Rick's warnings to not get involved in something he does not understand, and he pays the price. Meanwhile, like, Rick is really trying to tell him, hey, listen, dude, you don't understand these things. I'm telling you to avoid doing this.
Right.
Why are you doing this?
This episode is called Rattlestar Rick Lactia.
Yeah.
I should also say the episode 4 with the dragon is called Claw and Hoarder Special Victims Morty. So Rattlestar Actica is there's a they're driving and they kill a space snake or something. Morty wants to go on a spacewalk, and a space snake attacks him, and
it's like you don't understand time travel.
Yeah, right. Morty feels bad that the snake died, so he, like, tries to, like, make up for it, and in making up for it, he changes this whole planet's history. It's very similar to what happened with the fart cloud.
Yeah.
Right? Actually, it's also similar to what happened in the Purge episode with the cat people.
Yeah.
Morty feels bad about what he did.
So he tries to course correct, and then he fucks it up even worse.
Because in the end, Rick's almost cold calculating is better.
Yep. Like, all right, now Grandpa has to fix it all.
Right. Because he basically takes a snake from Earth and puts it on that planet. And then, like, all the scientist snakes are... But what's hilarious is all of the snakes on the snake planet are still, like, our snakes. So you have whole, like, 10-minute scenes of... It's the commitment to it.
Just fucking hissing back and forth.
It's just hilarious. And there's no subtitles. So you just, like, you kind of have to figure out, like, what is happening in this scene.
You definitely don't have to know how to read the episode.
Yeah. You're trying to understand what this hissing means. And what's the subplot? I'm trying to remember what the subplot of this episode is. Oh, this is what, oh, Jerry is flying. Oh, right. Jerry is trying to put ornaments or light Christmas lights on the roof. Yeah. And nobody trusts him to even not fall and kill himself. So Rick is like, all right, because, you know, Rick has just an insane invention for anything. He's like, okay. And he somehow makes him lighter than air so he could float. But he gives him, like, weighted shoes.
Yeah.
So basically he can't, so he doesn't fall off the ladder and die. But he loses one of his shoes and he
starts to float.
Right. And it just, he's just going for hours and he doesn't see any way down and he's starving and he's cold.
Losing
and he
all
just
hope.
Thinks,
all
right, I'm gonna die. This is how I die. And it is just, it's another one of these Jerry journeys of just mediocrity. And but eventually, like, he grabs onto a plane, and the plane goes down.
And then, he kicks, because the snake wants to help him.
Right.
So he kicks the snake into the turbine. The turbine combusts and explodes.
Mm-hmm.
And then fucking Jerry jumps off and lands on the tree, climbs down the tree. The plane crashes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I like that it was an episode based on, like, multiverses and time travel, because time travel was something that they always were weary about going into as an episode, because you know you would see in the box in Rick's garage it was just a time travel stuff,
right?
But they would do interdimensional jumping,
right?
But they never really did time travel. But this, it was like,
right,
it was time travel,
right?
Like straight time travel, and it was like real. It was completely tongue in cheek,
yeah,
completely tongue in cheek. And I like that they did it with snakes.
Right. The decision to make it these aliens, because there's so many different aliens and weird species in Rick and Morty, but to have it be this planet of snakes is interesting, because it's whenever they do a concept like that, it's kind of like, does it look exactly like our history except with snakes? Like, there's a snake Hitler, there was a snake Churchill, a snake Abraham Lincoln. Like how, that's always fun to execute.
But how hasn't the show jumped the shark? That's what I want to know.
Well, I'm trying,
because if you think about it, how many more wild adventures can they go on? How much more existential philosophy could they say? How much more Jerry can Jerry be Jerry? You know what I mean?
Like, right.
your interdimensional portal jumping, right? There's things about capitalism. There's things about socialism in it. There's things about communism in it.
Right. It's got a lot to say.
There's so many layers that, like, they're saying it, and it should be said already. Like, you know, honestly, it could have been done in two seasons, this cartoon.
I think the reason it hasn't jumped the shark is because the characters continue to travel to something. Yes, they have traits that are easily recognizable.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jeff Winger in Community.
Yeah.
You know, Rick is like Jeff Winger. Like, Jeff was always the same kind of like cocky asshole. But as Community went on, you see his instincts begin to change, and you see he begins to sort of just lean on his old personality as a sort of a safety blanket. And you see that with Rick and Morty. You are seeing Rick change. You're seeing Morty change, and the whole family dynamic is changing.
Yeah, but we're also never getting the Rick origin story, which still somehow is still refreshing.
You're right.
Where, you know, listen, I like the fact that we got the callback to Mr. Meeksy's.
Right.
And then Keegan-Michael Key made
all the time cops.
Yeah. So, like, they're bringing back the things that are really fucking funny about the show, but they're doing them in a way that is completely fresh and not stale. Like, okay, we can run this bit into the ground, and we could probably do this for another several episodes.
Right.
But they don't do that.
Right. Them bringing back Mr. Meeseeks, they did it in a good way, in a way where it's like, it's a tool in their tool belt now. It wasn't just like, here, this is for the crowd. Because they could have done it in season three.
There's so many unanswered questions. Rick's origin story. What happened to Bette's mother, right? What's the political aligning of the Citadel of Rick's? Like, there's just...
Right.
Like,
who is the evil Morty?
Where does he... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, so do we get all these answers in the rest of season four, part two? Or do you think it's gonna continue to go like this? Or are we going to see a completely different Rick Sanchez? And then in... season five in 3 years, when they write that, was it going to be completely different from season four?
No, I think almost like a British show, it's just going to be, you're going to get a handful of them every couple of years. And I think, as frustrating as that method is for fans of the show, it has led to good stuff. It never feel. I mean, think this is season four. Season four of almost any TV show, you'll start to see its age.
Yeah, but where's the canon, though? Like, are we just that used to now that television shows need canon? Do we treat...
I think there is canon.
Do we treat this cartoon as what it should be? It is just an episodic, no tie-in, like, cartoon similar to the Flintstones or the Jetsons?
No.
Or do we actually believe that
all these... I think that it's going somewhere.
You think that they're all bobbing, they all have a connection somewhere. Or are we intellectualizing this way more than we should?
No, I don't think so. Because I am sure that Dan Harmon mapped all of this out. Because there are weird clues and Easter eggs. There's some, you know, there is something to do with Rick's past and Bird Person and... Like, remember, I forget what season it was, where Morty's in Bird Person's house and he sees a picture of a young Rick holding a young Morty, and he's like, what is that picture? And it doesn't make sense to him because he didn't know Rick when he was young. So that leads to a theory that a lot of people have, that the Rick that we know somehow fucked up in his own universe and found a universe where Rick had left his family so he could come back in and be like, oh, I'm back.
Yeah.
We don't, and because we know very, very little about, you said his wife and stuff.
You know nothing.
But, you know, I don't know if the end game, if where it's going is a sort of narrative plot ending. I think it's going to a character ending. I think it's all about the characters that are driving everything. So I think the end, wherever that might be, we will find that, you know.
Yeah, but isn't that just like you're subverting from what should be talked about, which is, you know, this Rick Sanchez origin story? Is it kind of like when Jack Pearson dies, and like, does the show loses its magic once Jack Pearson dies? Or now could we get over the fact that we now know how Jack died, and the way more important story underneath the passing of Jack has become, how do they cope without Jack?
I don't think that Rick and Morty would do the Super Bowl episode where Jack dies. I think he would save that for the very end.
True.
I don't think they. I don't think they would prematurely pull something like that.
True.
True. They clearly don't care. I mean, there's a disconnect between the show itself and like all the merchandise it sells. Like, they clearly care about their fans, but not to a point where they're going to kowtow to you and give you, you know, 8 episodes every 6 months. It's like, you're going to get them when you get them. We're working on them. Trust that they'll be good.
Yeah.
And that's all you get.
And there's no word when they're going to come back to Adult Swim again.
Right. This technically was all... We were told this was half a season, but we've heard nothing about when the rest of season 4 is going to happen.
See, the rest of season 4 could happen 2 years from now.
Right. Exactly.
So we're getting worked. But it's a brilliant work.
Yeah. So I think if it keeps staying at this level, it will be one of the best series ever.
Well, it could stay at this level because they have so much time to sit and think. It's amazing to me that the turnaround time, first off, to even think about the passage of time and what we get caught up in doing.
Yeah.
I didn't think that it was almost 4 years past.
Well, it's 4 seasons, but it's been 7 years.
No, but 7 years of this television show.
Oh, yeah.
4 years in between.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
3 and 4.
Was it really 4 years?
Almost, yeah. It was like 3 years, I think.
Wow, yeah.
Maybe 4.
I think the only thing that could keep this show down is...
ego?
No, the fan base. Well, not the whole fan base, because there's plenty of great people who like it. But the neckbeardy fan base that, like, they're like this, you know... They think that liking Rick and Morty makes them smarter.
Yeah.
They think they instead of understanding Rick as a tragic character, they model themselves after Rick.
Yeah, they don't,
you know,
get it.
Like these fucking like
idiots.
Yeah, these people online who like worship Rick and don't realize that you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Though they've given the fandom a bad name because they're toxic.
Well, I mean, that the same thing could be said about fucking wrestling fandom as well. Star Wars fandom, a Game of Thrones fandom. It's once
There's always a toxic element. But Rick and Morty seems to be, it's a big one.
Okay.
It's a bit, you know. And look, it's growing in Star Wars, too. There's more Star Wars fans that are toxic than they used to be.
Yeah.
And, of course, Ghostbusters.
But why be toxic when you have something this interesting?
I think...
And thought-provoking and really fucking entertaining.
Because I think these neckbeards... These are the same guys that love The Joker. And they think this is the smartest movie they've ever seen. And these were the same guys that loved Fight Club. It's like these guys who... They feel like... What happens is they see characters in film and TV and media that are as misanthropic as they are. And they see that representation and they connect to it. But they connect to it on a level of, like, not understanding that there's something more critical there. They look at Tyler Durden. They look at the Joker, Joaquin Phoenix, the Joker.
Anti-heroes.
Right. They look at Rick and they go, oh, I'm like that. I'm as disenfranchised as that. This is my hero. And if you don't agree with me, you're a fucking idiot who doesn't understand this show. You're a fucking plebe. You don't deserve to watch this show.
Yeah, but those characters that you just mentioned are tragically flawed, but then also at the same time, too, they understand, like, the fundamental principle of what life is to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the neckbeards don't understand that. I don't think they could conceptualize the idea of, oh, shit, okay, there's something more than... It's bigger than me, and because that's what Rick Sanchez ultimately... It's bigger than us.
Like, right.
None of this really... It matters when we're gone.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? There'll always be something to take the place, and the machine will keep on going. It was what, you know, Tyler Durden's big thing was, you know?
But I think these guys, what they pick up on is the nihilism of it.
Yeah.
And that connects to their own feeling of nothing meaning anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, I don't mean to sound like alarmist, but I find people who are really into the Joker, when I say the Joker, I mean the new Joker movie.
With Joaquin Phoenix.
Joaquin Phoenix. Yeah. I find those people scary a little bit because I feel like they are making a hero out of
somebody who's supposed to be a piece of shit.
Right. Yeah. It's like if someone watched Taxi Driver and they started to worship Travis Bickle.
Yeah.
That's basically what it is. And I worry about that.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you want to create these heroes out of nothing because maybe you feel in your way subconsciously, well, you can't act out and do this way. You know, when you watch the Joker, you get it. You know what the story was about.
Right.
It was a person that kind of wasn't in the best space mentally.
The thing, I don't want to get into the Joker too much, but having seen the Joker, the thing that really disturbed me the most was how much the movie seemed to reflect the real world story of Bernie Goetz.
Yes.
Right? The first people that the Joker kills are people who are bullying him on a train. And that's what happened with Bernie Goetz in real life. And the conservative community looked at Bernie Goetz as a vigilante, a hero.
Yeah.
When, you know, Bernie Goetz was a crazy racist guy.
Yeah.
And that's what very much that scared me about the movie, because it's like, I don't know.
No. Listen, I understand that it's, you know, when you can make murder easy, even Rick and Morty does it. They make killing and taking lives very, very easy.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's this comedic undertone that Rick could always come back, you know?
And, like, you could just – life is meaningless and pointless. And that's what Morty is always trying to instill a sort of morality into what he's doing.
Even some of the older episodes, you know, where he's, like, hurtling through space.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, God, 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 as he's, like, trying to fix this thing. And then, you know, once he fixes this, like, whatever it was on his wrist that could help him, like, teleport out. And then he's like, you know, fuck you, God. You know, I'm the man. And it's like, dude, like, all right, I get it. I understand what they were going with it. But, you know, you could really go into an entire, like, season where, you know, Rick has this come to Jesus moment, and now he wants to try to find out like life's greatest answers, because maybe everything, you know, maybe the existential dread that he's feeling is bullshit, and maybe his own fucking, you know, bullshit that he's been preaching for years doesn't make sense. Like, I would like to see them go a little bit deeper with that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he needs to find the meaning of life because, yeah, his life has been rather empty. And maybe they're doing that with this.
By the way, the rumor, I'm just looking this up.
Yeah.
The rumor is that season 4 will resume again in March.
Okay. Which is soon. But not too soon.
We'll see if that happens.
We'll see. Overall, outstanding job, though.
Yeah.
Outstanding
Absolutely.
Job.
Absolutely. If you haven't watched Rick and Morty, but you're somewhat, you don't understand it, you see Rick and Morty socks at Hot Topic, and you see people talking about it, and you're like, I don't, this seems like it's not for me. I would say,
watch it.
Give it a chance if you like comedy, or give it a chance if you like sci-fi, because it's both really good sci-fi and really good comedy.
And good storytelling.
Yeah.
So all three seasons right now are on Hulu, and season 4 is on the Adult Swim app.
Yes. So, Emilio,
Michael,
it was great to dive deep on Rick and Morty with you. Hopefully there'll be more episodes for us to talk about soon.
Love a dub dub.
Go bye bye.